You're listening to Dine to Learn More with Trevor and Laura. Dine to Learn More is where we talk about death and bereavement to deepen our understanding of this inevitable part of life.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Trevor, and hi, everyone listening. As we have been talking death and grief, I think it's important that we speak to contemplating our own mortality.
Right. You know, we spend so much of our lives avoiding thinking about the fact that we are all going to die one day.
Yes.
Of course, it's not that we should be always thinking about this. I mean, that wouldn't be good to be thinking about that all the time, any one thing all the time, you know.
Right.
But when we're grieving, it's normal for death to rise up more prominently in our mind, so to speak. It's then very common that we would feel increased anxiety and depression, which is something that I see often working with clients who are grieving. It's very normal to have that increased depression and anxiety. And it's really interesting because our listeners don't realize that we tried recording this same topic a while ago, and due to technological challenges, we were unable to record it. We thought we recorded it, but when I went back to listen to it, we hadn't recorded it. And so that is really suiting for this topic that we're talking about today, which I like to look at this word transience.
Okay.
I think that it comes into play when we're talking about human mortality. The word transience emerges in the English language in the 1600s, and it means transitory or not durable. It originates from a Latin word, transire, which is actually two words joined together. Trans, which means across or beyond, and ire, which means to go. So we end up with a word that means going or moving over, through, or across something. So by the 1680s, it was used to mean passing through a place without staying.
Oh, that's quite lovely, if you think it's poetic.
Yeah, I mean, because aren't we all just doing that exactly? Passing through a place without staying. To not be in a state of movement would mean inertness or stagnation, a lack of growth.
Right.
Right, so yeah, we might resist this, we might fear or even be angered by the changes that are part of life, but without movement and change, we could not fully experience what is in this world, including ourselves. We would not be able to fully connect with or know who we are, because, you know, what we are is always in a state of movement.
Well, I think when I think of movies and books where the topic of immortality is covered, that is one of the main points, is that usually when they have someone who's immortal, well, everything's the same and they're always there.
Yeah.
And so what is, and most often it's better to move, it's better to
right.
change, it's better to live. It's interesting how much that actually comes up as a main storyline,
uh-huh.
is that it isn't the ultimate.
No, but it seems to be somewhere in our conscience to be a desire of ours, a normal human need to have this fantasy of living forever, to somehow conquer death. But yeah, like you say, these characters in these stories and movies that are immortal, I think they get it all wrong. I think they would be very depressed or very anxious or maybe just deflated of any real energy to achieve or do anything. I mean, why bother if you're going to be here for a million years? Where's the motivation to do anything?
Right. Well, any of the things I've watched or read that really dive into that character, that is the point. It's not just, oh, this is a scary monster who lives
yeah.
forever and we're going to use it as a story. No, the ones that are diving in, they hit this thing, and it usually is they are depressed, they are sad, they are tired.
Yeah.
I even read a book of a man who just lived a really long life, longer than most, hundreds of years, and how tiring it was, and how he was exhausted, and he wish more than anything he could just move and do his life like everyone else. He did.
Right.
He wanted the ending. He wanted changes. He wanted physical changes. Mm-hmm. He wanted to grow old.
Yeah, probably because, again, somehow deep within us we realize that is the inevitability, or that is the one thing that gives meaning to life is the end of the of our life, that the fact that it's not going to last forever. And so
right.
if we can reconcile that reality and live with it rather than fighting against it, perhaps we can live more fully.
Right. And I think maybe the irony is we are reluctant to consider our own death, that we feel maybe it's setting a wheel in motion, that now if I think too much about it, death will come sooner for me. But the wheel was already turning when we first took our breath.
That's so true, isn't it?
You know.
Well, that reminds me of Ernest Becker, who is a American cultural anthropologist. He, in 1974, he published a book called The Denial of Death.
Okay.
This is a quote from that book. "The idea of death, the fear of it, haunts the human animal like nothing else. It is a mainspring of human activity, designed largely to avoid the fatality of death, to overcome it by denying in some way that it is the final destiny of man." So I think Ernest Becker takes a bit of a hard look at it, perhaps
mm-hmm.
In some ways a very cold, stark look at
right.
how humans are very psychologically geared towards avoiding or denying the reality of death, to the point where we fail to live our lives fully. We fail to really know who we truly are. But those are defense mechanisms that kind of keep us from being overwhelmed by that reality.
Right.
So he suggests that if we don't have those defense mechanisms in place, we might struggle more with different types of mental illnesses. I don't think his theories, I'm not sure if they were researched or, but the theory of it, the basis of it, is interesting to consider how maybe we spend a lot of our psychic and even physical energy trying to avoid the reality of our mortality. And if we can reconcile that and live with it, perhaps we can use that energy for better purpose.
Right, and to live in a way that we feel good, that aligns with ourselves. I mean, having a fear of death is natural and almost encouraged, because it does make people live in a safer way. If you're fearless, well, you might end up hurting yourself or do things that
right.
drive you to dangerous situations. So we were taught by our parents, oh no, careful, careful.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a fear that was always, you know, socialized on us, which
right.
plays into then why we don't want to face death, talk about death, think about it. But I think there's a balance to
mm-hmm.
be found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we look at it culturally too. You're referring to how we learn things in our society, how parents teach us, how our culture teaches us. That's really interesting, isn't it, when we look at how perhaps throughout different periods of history, different cultures, different ethnic groups, backgrounds, how they look at death and how they interpret it or define it or reconcile it. I think it probably contributes a great deal to how each person individually manages the reality of death and what they choose to do with it.
Right.
What we're taught. What are we taught? You know, if we ever stop to think about what are we taught about death. And I know we've maybe talked in another podcast about how we have a workshop where we go into the schools locally and talk to children about grief, how death is part of the natural cycle of life,
right.
and the normal responses that we have to that. And this is something that seems to be appreciated because our school system and they're not sure what to do with that. They see that when there's a child loses a family member in the classroom, or very tragically when a staff in the school or even a student in the school dies, they're not sure what to do or say about that. Yeah. They understand that they have to accommodate that and make some effort to help the children to express whatever it is that they might be expressing or feeling, but they're not sure how to do that or even what to say.
Well, if we weren't taught, or we were taught not to talk about death, then when even as an adult, we still go back to what we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes hard, which is great why you part of the organization was to push out in educating about this, I think.
Yeah.
That's these first steps. But I mean, I don't really have anything that my parents specifically sat me down to talk about death.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't invited to funerals. We weren't supposed to come. We weren't really supposed to.
Right.
It was almost like they didn't want the thought of death to touch the children, so they were just not going to. But we all knew things were happening.
Yeah.
We all knew everyone's sad, and it was confusing, but we also knew we weren't allowed to ask about it.
Yeah, yeah. So children, I think that's what you're describing there, Laura, is very normal for our society, how children are educated around death and end of life. So what does that do? It creates a lot of blank spaces, unknown spaces,
mm-hmm.
and almost like it's taboo for us to think about it or talk about it. And so it comes out in play, it comes out in stories.
Right.
I mean, I was amazed at how many Disney movies had the theme
yes.
of death and loss as like a really major plot.
Yes.
In those stories. So if we don't intentfully address it, we do it in other ways, symbolically perhaps, through art and literature and in our modern movies. It's just something that we intuitively need to do, I think.
Yeah, people want to know, people want to have an answer, and well, we can't answer what happens after we die. We can teach our children and ourselves to, we know we will die. Let's
mm-hmm.
live a life that
yeah.
we're going to feel good about and live in each of these moments.
Yes.
Because it is, as you said,
yes.
transient. We're not here to stay.
That's right. We're all passing through. And
mm-hmm.
The poet and philosopher John Donahue, he so gracefully explained it this way. Transience makes a ghost out of each experience. There was never a dawn that did not drop down into noon, never a noon which did not fade into evening. And so to this, I would like to add to this quote that there was never even an evening that did not recede into night, only to transform into another dawn.
Right.
I like this idea that we're all living in cycles. We talk about the life cycle and how death is part of that, but perhaps it's not the end part of it. Perhaps there's something that happens then. There's a cycle. It continues after that. But O'Donohue in this quote, he prompts us to consider how memory holds out against transience, sort of like chipping a piece of stone away from a gigantic boulder before it erodes in the passing of millennia. And so I kind of like to think of it as like we keep a little pebble in our pocket as a lasting memento. This is a wonderful analogy to hold when a person is grieving for a loved one who has died, that at the beginning of one's grief journey, that boulder might be so huge and overwhelming, they might even feel like they're underneath it and they can't get out from under it,
Right.
It's just such a weight of powerful emotions and thoughts and whatever the emotions, fear, sorrow, anxiety, but eventually they start chipping away. Eventually that boulder is reduced to a small stone that they can carry and start moving down the path of life, and eventually it becomes a pebble that gets so smooth they just carry it around in their pocket as a reminder of their loved one. And this idea that grief never really ever goes away, but we find a way to carry the loved one with us in memory.
Right. Yeah, that's really beautiful, that how memory holds out against transience.
Yeah.
There's a famous quote that I've always loved that makes me think of it, that says, they say you die twice, once when they bury you in the grave, and the second time is the last time somebody mentions your name.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's something just very sweet about that, that while someone may die that we love, that doesn't mean there's a finality or a fullness to the death. They're still mm-hmm. with us. We can still carry that part of spirit memory, however.
Yes, for sure. That's the power of the imagination, of love, and of connection.
Yeah. And that we, and I think it's important that everybody takes a moment to think of their own life and to feel okay with where they are and what they're doing and whether they have a loved one they've lost or not, but you know these things are coming.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be scared to maybe think about it or even prepare in some ways
sure.
for it. But
sure.
Not all the time, not in an unhealthy way,
no,
but
no, no.
in a
yeah.
in an accepting way, I suppose.
Yeah, I like what you're saying about that, because that puts this what we're talking about, this fear of death, the fear of mortality, into a different light. It could be a motivator.
Yeah.
In so many ways, it can help to inspire us
mm-hmm.
to truly connect with who we really are.
Yeah.
And if we do so, perhaps we just open doors of experience that we didn't even realize were there, and life becomes very enriching and fulfilling for us. And then this concept, this fear of death, maybe isn't so intimidating after all.
Yeah, and that could be the whole secret of life that some people talk about, but that's the key, is you accept yourself and you know yourself and you figured
mm-hmm.
it out in this life, and that's
right.
that's all it is.
Yeah, maybe that's what we're here to do.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking about transience and how this concept of passing through is part of life experience, and all good things must come to an end, and here we are arriving at the end of our recording for today.
Yes. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. And if you have any questions or any suggestions, don't hesitate to contact us.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for being open to learning more about death and grief. Stay tuned for more episodes by following us on Instagram or Facebook.